is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, John Russell, and Jill Robbins. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will continue our series on America's national parks. But first, as more Americans are being vaccinated, more people say they are now willing to get the shots than in January. However, questions about side effects and how the shots were tested still hold some people back. This presents a challenge for U.S. health officials who are ready to expand vaccination to children as young as 12 years old. The APNORC survey, released Tuesday, found 1 in 5 American adults now say they probably or definitely will not get vaccinated. In January, when the shots were first given out, opinion researchers found about 1 in 3 said that they would not get vaccinated. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that more than 150 million people, about 58% of all adults, have received at least one dose of a vaccine. Among those who remain unvaccinated, only 34% of people in the study say they definitely will not get the shot. About 3/4 of those who said they are unlikely to get vaccinated have little to no confidence that the vaccines were tested enough. Some 55% were very concerned about side effects. The numbers, however, mean a large number of unvaccinated Americans could be persuaded to get the shots. Kizmikia Corbett is an immunologist with the National Institutes of Health. Corbett helped lead development of the Moderna shot. She spends hours giving answers to questions from Americans. Her job is to fight against misinformation about the 3 vaccines approved for emergency use in the U.S. She tells people the COVID-19 vaccines will not cause inability to bear children. Also, the speedy development of vaccines does not mean they are less safe, Corbett told the AP. Corbett has attended gatherings held by colleges, African American religious leaders, doctors, and even basketball great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to talk about the vaccine. She said, "The best way to overcome distrust is to explain the science in understandable terms for strangers, just like she does for her family." But really, we should have started the conversations very early about what went into it, she said. This way, the public would have understood that no steps were missed in vaccine development.
Volunteers from religious groups across the United States are organizing aid efforts to help India deal with its COVID-19 crisis. Aid organizations supported by Hindu, Muslim, Sikh, and other religious groups are assisting in the efforts. Most of the groups have ties to Indian communities in the U.S. The aid includes oxygen and electrical equipment facing shortages in Indian hospitals. The groups have also raised millions of dollars for other needed supplies and gathered in prayer to provide spiritual support for suffering communities. Manzoor Ghori is the director of Indian Muslim Relief and Charities. In his words, India's current crisis is both a human tragedy and a personal tragedy. He is one of many in Indian communities in the U.S. to lose relatives to COVID-19 in India. Ghori told the Associated Press he had so far lost 5 loved ones, including 2 nephews, to the disease. His organization has donated more than $1 million to the Indian aid effort. Among other things, the money went to support teachers and provided thousands of medical kits and more than 300,000 meals. India's latest crisis has pushed the number of COVID-19 cases past 22.9 million, with more than 249,000 deaths. Kashyap Patel, an Atlanta-based doctor, said India's pandemic has been catastrophic. At least 12 members of his family became infected and his 73-year-old uncle died. Patel volunteers in North America for the BAPS Swaminarayan Sanstha Hindu organization. It has provided 250 oxygen concentrators and several hundred thousand dollars in COVID-19 aid to support India's overloaded health system. "It is challenging to find hospital beds," Patel said of the situation in India. "It is challenging to find oxygen, to find modern medicine." The U.S. Office of Khalsa Aid, a British-based Sikh humanitarian organization, said it was sending another 500 concentrators and 500 electrical transformers this week to New Delhi. At a warehouse on New York's Long Island, workers prepared numerous boxes for shipping. "In these last 2 weeks, many of us haven't slept. We've been running our day jobs at the same time," said one of the group's directors, Manpreet Kaur. "It's been an intense period of time, but for us, it's about giving back to the community," Kaur added. "And the people in India definitely need that support." I'm Brian Lynn.
Garcia is a 39-year-old Guatemalan man who recently entered the United States illegally. He is currently at Casa Alitas, a shelter for immigrants in Tucson, Arizona. While there, he told about his border crossing. Garcia said he paid smugglers $20,000 to get him across the border. He said he had to sell all he owned to come to the U.S. Crossing into the United States illegally is a big business in Central and South America. Many people leave their countries due to the violence and poverty. They pay huge amounts of money and risk their lives to leave. Garcia said of his experience, "They put me in a trunk where you couldn't breathe, and well, thank God I survived, because they say that all those who are put there, they die." The U.S. Border Patrol says illegal smuggling operations are big business. A Rand Corporation study estimates smugglers made between $200 million and $2.3 billion in 2017, transporting people into the U.S., mostly from Central America. USPB spokesman Mario Escalante said it is a dangerous business as well. He said smugglers sometimes abandon the migrants, steal from them, rape them, and worse. Garcia agrees. They ask for a quantity of money, and if they don't get it by the time and date they say, they'll kill you, he said. Henry Queller is a U.S. lawmaker from Texas. The congressional area he represents stretches from San Antonio to the border town of McAllen in southern Texas. Queller told VOA that smugglers also provide transport for illegal drug traffickers. But it is not just criminal organizations making money from immigrants. Private research business Dynamic Securities Analytics reports that the American financial industry also profits from the illegal business. They profit from fees connected to electronic payments made by undocumented immigrants. President Joe Biden supports extensive immigration reform. Biden has also warned migrants against making illegal border crossings. I'm John Russell.
American President Joe Biden is making child care and education a major concern of his administration. In his first address to a joint session of Congress on April 29, Biden proposed a $1.8 trillion spending plan to expand government support for children, families, and education. The plan, called American Families Plan, includes $200 billion for free preschool for 3- and 4-year-olds. The president said, "Research shows when a young child goes to school, not daycare, they are far more likely to graduate from high school and go to college or something after high school." He added, "No matter what background they come from, it puts them in the position to be able to compete all the way through 12 years. Preschool, also known as pre-kindergarten or pre-K, is a program to help children with the beginning steps of learning and socializing. Daycare centers focus more on caring for children than learning. Rebecca Anguiano teaches preschool at an elementary school in Washington, D.C. The classes are bilingual. They are taught in both English and Spanish. She said students who attend 2 years of preschool have done better than those who have not. Anguiano said, if they miss those 2 years, it's kind of catch-me-up for them. I definitely feel that starting early, especially at a bilingual school, is key for a lot of success. The National Institute for Early Education Research says, at this time, only 4 American states and Washington, D.C. spend enough money to support preschool programs. The nation's capital spends the most money per preschool student. It also has the highest percentage of students in pre-K classes. 79% of 3- and 4-year-olds attend preschool in Washington, D.C. And nationwide, just 20% attend. Washington is one of the most expensive cities to raise a child. A 2018 study says childcare in the city can cost up to $2,000 per month for each child. In some places, parents choose to stay home with their children instead of having a job and paying for care. In 2018, research from the Center for American Progress showed that about 10% more mothers entered the workforce after the city started its preschool program. Student test scores have also gone up since the change. That year, Washington schools were among the few across the nation to see an increase in math and reading scores. Josh Axelrod has 2 children attending preschool in Washington, D.C. He said the program is a huge benefit to living in the city. Our experience has been great, he added. Washington's preschool program is not without its problems, however. Many elementary schools in the city do not offer preschool, and some programs are better than others. There is also a very high demand for some preschool spots, which means that some children will not be placed into their neighborhood school. Others are not placed at all. Biden's proposal comes at a time when preschool attendance has fallen by 25% in the past year, largely due to the pandemic. The administration says free preschool nationwide could save the average American family $13,000 and benefit 5 million children. And it proposes to pay for the plan by raising taxes on wealthy Americans. Republican opponents to the idea say it costs too much and that families will be making childcare decisions based on what the government wants. For the plan to pass, the president will need Republican support in an evenly divided Senate. Senator Josh Hawley is a Republican from the state of Missouri. He shared his opposition in an opinion piece on Fox Business. No family should be forced into a particular child care arrangement by the government, and no parent should be treated worse by the tax code for choosing to do the work of raising kids at home, he wrote. Anguiano, the Washington, D.C. preschool teacher, sees universal preschool as a way to improve education equity. Many families from poorer areas cannot pay for private preschool, she said, keeping children away from school and parents away from working. I think expanding this nationwide, you will most definitely see not just an educational benefit for kids, but an economic benefit for families, Anguiano said. I'm Jill Robbins.
Today, we visit a place of strange and silent beauty. As beautiful as this place is, its name provides evidence of very real danger. We are exploring Death Valley National Park. Death Valley is a land of beautiful yet dangerous extremes. It has nearly 1.4 million hectares of desert and mountains. There are mountains that reach more than 3,000 meters into the sky. The valley's Badwater Basin area is the lowest land in the Western Hemisphere. It lies 86 meters below sea level. Death Valley can be dangerously cold during the winter months. Storms in the mountains can cause sudden floods on the floor of the valley. But during summer months, the air temperature has been as high as 57 degrees Celsius. The extreme heat of Death Valley has killed people in the past. Death Valley does not forgive those who are not careful.
Within Death Valley National Park is evidence of several ancient volcanoes that caused huge explosions. Evidence of one of these explosions is called Yubihibi Crater. The explosion left a huge hole in the ground, almost a kilometer and a half wide. In many areas of Death Valley, it is easy to see where the ground has been pushed up violently by movement deep in the earth. This has created unusual and beautiful rock formations with colors of red, brown, gray, yellow, and black. In other parts of Death Valley, there are lines in the rock. The lines are evidence of the past presence of water. The area was deep under an ocean for many thousands of years. Much of Death Valley is flat and extremely dry. In fact, scientists believe it is the driest place in the United States. In some areas, the ground is nothing but salt. Nothing is able to grow in this salty ground.
However, it would be wrong to think that nothing lives in Death Valley. The valley is full of life. Wildflowers grow very quickly, even after a small amount of rain. Some desert plants can send their roots down more than 18 meters to reach water deep in the ground. Several kinds of birds live in Death Valley, as do mammals and reptiles. Visitors might see the dog-like animal called the coyote, or wild bighorn sheep, or other animals like the desert jackrabbit, the desert tortoise, and a large reptile called a chuckwalla. Many different snakes live there too. Some are dangerous, like the sidewinder rattlesnake. It is an extremely poisonous snake with long, sharp teeth, or fangs. Throughout history, Native Americans found ways to survive in Death Valley. Rock art and other remains show that humans lived in the valley as far back as 9,000 years ago.
Death Valley is a huge place. It extends more than 225 kilometers across the southern part of California into the neighboring state of Nevada. The valley is part of the Mojave Desert. The area got its name in 1849. That was the year after gold was discovered in California. Thousands of people from around the country traveled to the gold mining areas of the state. They were in a hurry to get there before other people did. Many people were not careful during their travels. One group trying to reach California decided to take a path called the Old Spanish Trail. By December, they had reached Death Valley. They did not have to survive the terrible heat of summer, but there was still an extreme lack of water. There were too few plants for their work animals to eat. The people could not find a pass through the tall mountains to the west of the valley. Slowly, they began to suffer from a lack of food. To survive, they killed their work animals for food and began to walk out of the valley. As they left, a woman in the group looked back and said, "Goodbye, Death Valley." The name has never been changed.
Death Valley officially became a national park in 1994. It is the largest national park in the lower 48 states. More than 1 million people visit the park each year. Titus Canyon is one of the most popular places to visit in the park. It has huge mountains, colorful rocks, ancient rock art, and rare plants. There is even a ghost town, a town that has been abandoned by all its residents. Death Valley is full of ghost towns. Many people visit Death Valley in late winter and early spring, when wildflowers come to life there. The harsh desert floor becomes very colorful.
Some visitors come to Death Valley for just a day. Tour buses bring travelers from Las Vegas, Nevada. They ride around the park in their bus, visit several places, and are back in their Las Vegas hotel by night. However, many other visitors stay in the park. The most popular area to stay in is Furnace Creek. Furnace Creek is the largest area of human activity within Death Valley National Park. There is a hotel as well as places to camp. The historic inn at Furnace Creek is built on a low hill. The main public room in the hotel has large windows that look far out over Death Valley. Hotel guests gather near these large windows in the evening to watch the sun make long shadows on the floor of the valley and on the far mountains. This beautiful image seems to change each minute. The sun slowly turns the valley a gold color that deepens to a soft brown, then changes to a dark red. As night comes, the mountains turn a dark purple color, then black. Usually, visitors are very quiet as they watch the setting sun. A few try to photograph it. But the valley is too huge to capture in a photo. Most visitors leave only with the memory of the fiery sunset in the extraordinary Death Valley National Park. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.